There we go. That's better. Good morning. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 FM. My name's Aisha Barmania, and today, or this show, is all about Peterborough, politics, people, culture, and I want to start out today's show by talking about the animals of the Peterborough area. In the second half of the show, starting around, I don't know, 10:45-ish, we're going to move over to talking a bit about Remembrance Day, and we'll take some calls from you about that. If you have something you know you want to say already, you can phone in to 705-741-4011, and we'll take down your info and then cue you up when we're talking about Remembrance Day. But that's around 10:45, and then at 11 we'll do the minute of silence for Remembrance Day. But first, I wanted to talk a bit about cats. So last night, I was about to go to bed, and I actually don't really remember why, but I went to the window and was looking out onto the street, and it was snow-covered and pretty peaceful, and I saw this little black cat walking around, and it was walking around a car in front of our house, and then it was walking up our little walkway and going up to our porch. It was a little black cat, and it reminded me of my own cat, and to the point that I actually had a second of thinking, how did my cat get outside? And I was looking out, and it looked really cold out, and this looked like a little stray cat. So I hurried downstairs, got a little bowl of kibbs that we usually give to our cats, and put it out on the porch for it. It wasn't outside when I got there, but it just got me thinking about stray cats and how we treat stray cats and how we take care of them. I had a feeling this morning that I don't think that cat had a good night. I feel like it probably was really cold, or it maybe couldn't find a very warm place. And I was thinking about when I got our cats. So my roommates and I, we have two cats named Sparrow and Greif, and we adopted them, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, when we were in university and in second year living at our, like, the very first house that I had lived at that wasn't my parents' house and it wasn't residence at university, on London Street. And we were staying there, and it was a night pretty similar to the nights we've been having. It was like late November or early December, and it was really cold, and there was all of a sudden a snow coming down, and we were hearing these meows from outside. There was a mama cat that had given birth recently to a litter of kittens, and they were living somewhere outside, like under a porch or something. We saw them every once in a while, but we couldn't quite pin them down. And my roommates and I, we decided to catch them. So we got a cat-catching box, I think. It was like a really rough-looking one. It looked like it was more for raccoons than cats. But we put it outside, we put food in it, and we very anxiously were waiting for whether it would work and whether we would actually end up catching these little kittens. And if we could catch the mama cat, she was pretty feral, but I mean, it's always good to keep them together. So we put it out on the first night and kind of anxiously watching it from the window to see if a cat was going to go into it. And I don't think we got anything on the first night, but eventually, I think the next day, the most friendly kitten, which ended up being named Fiero, he went into the cage and got trapped, and we brought him inside and gave him a flea bath, and he was very cute. And we did that with the rest of the kittens as well, until there was one kitten left, a little black kitten, and he was definitely the most skittish of the bunch, and He was very nervous, and he would always eat the food that we left out, but he wouldn't go into that cage. He was just too suspicious of it, until one day he did. And we brought him inside and gave him a flea bath, and he bit me and clawed up my roommate, and very anxious little cat. He was always like darting around the room, trying to get away from us, hiding. He would make these fantastic bids for the window, like these huge leaps across the room, I guess to try to get out of a closed window. And that ended up being my cat-ish. And I called him Sparrow because he kept making these fantastic jumps all around the room, and he'd kind of soar around. And for a while, I kept him in my room with his sister, Greif, and they would cuddle together kind of in fear whenever I was around. And at night when I was sleeping, Sparrow would be in the window making these really, really loud yowling sounds. I think he was calling for his mom. And he would also do stuff like claw his way up the curtains. I don't know why, but it's kind of this weird reaction. And then he also would like eat all of the food. Like we'd put out bowls of food for him and Greif, and then Sparrow would just eat it all the way up. And he also had eye problems, so we had to put drops on his eyes. But we still have Greif and Sparrow, and they're a lot more comfortable now. They're Sparrow still has a lot of like weird behaviors, and I don't think that's ever going to go away, but he's a lot better now. He doesn't run away from people. He loves cuddling. He still has eating problems. He'll still eat a lot of Greif's food. And up until recently, he used to hide whenever like the door opened and a stranger came in. But he's a lot better now. And I've just been thinking a lot about, in the past like 12 hours since I saw that black cat outside, about feral cats and how Sparrow and Greif became really, really lovely indoor cats, even though they've got these weird quirks. And they'll never really stop having a bit of that feral edge. But we took them in, and they're the best pets we've got. They're the only pets. Well, actually, that's not true. We have other pets, but they're my favorite pets. And there is an organization in Peterborough called Operation Catnip that helps people who want to take care of feral cat colonies. And back in March, I went out to one of those feral cat colonies in Burley Falls, which has since been sort of wrapped up. It's no longer considered a feral cat colony. It's good to go. But at that colony, there were, I think, at least 24 cats, and mostly kittens, and they were kind of mating with each other in a not very good way. And they were living behind a hotel in Burley Falls and in this kind of like cottage area. And these two people decided to take it upon themselves to help care for this colony. So they would drive up from Peterborough, bring food with them, make little cat shelters, and they were the feral cat colony caregivers. So I went up to Burley Falls back in March and talked to the cat colony caregivers. So here's a bit of our conversation.
Hi, my name's Brienne, and I am one of the people that started to notice this colony and decided that they needed help.
And my name's Adam Goland, and I'm Brienne's fiance, and together we've sort of started an initiative where we're trying to care for the Burley Falls colony of cats. Yeah, so when we first came up, we would just feed the cats whenever we would bring our leftovers, and but at one point we noticed last September there were some kittens that were born, and there had been a lot of kittens born throughout the summer, but unfortunately we learned after a really cold night once that those kittens had died. And for us, that was really the point where we decided, okay, we've got to do something to prevent more of these kittens to being born. The weather's just not going to be hospitable for them. And the colony had grown really that summer from about 3 the year before to on this side about 26. So it was a huge growth. And we thought there's a lot of young cats that aren't going to be equipped for a really cold winter here. So that's when we jumped into action.
I had heard of an organization called Operation Catnip, and I knew right away that they would be my first call. And they have been absolutely incredible throughout the whole process. They taught us everything we have needed to know to take on this big project. And they are a very hardworking group of women, and there's no way I could have done any of this without them.
So I'm Minik Beneteau. I am a volunteer like everyone else with Operation Catnip. Yeah, the group started, it was the wish and hope of one person who brought together a group of people who met in February of 2012. And it took about a year to kind of figure out just what exactly we were going to land on in terms of putting our, where we were putting our energies, and the TNR was where we landed. So yeah, 2013 is when we started.
Who was that one person?
Margaret Bonnegut. She was the owner of Maggie's Eatery, and a serious cat lover, and was taking care of some feral cats in her neighborhood, and just felt like, you know, something needed to happen. And so she brought, like, just called a community meeting. 25 people came out. It was a storm on February 28th. And so we worked from there. In a nutshell, well, Operation Catnip is a trap, neuter, release program. So we trap feral, also abandoned or stray cats. So cats who don't have any owners, who are out in the community, and we will trap them, take them to vets, have them spayed and neutered, and then we return them back to where we found them. And so we work with colony caregivers, so we don't just go around picking up stray cats. We have people who contact us who have agreed to care for those animals, provide them with food and shelter. We ask them if they can to also pay for the expense of some of the expenses, not the whole thing, and to also make a commitment to care for those animals once they get returned.
And so you work with these colony caregivers. What is the role that Operation Catnip takes on from there? Is that just the trapping?
So when a caregiver contacts us, it's quite a process. The trappers, usually they work in pairs, will go and visit the caregiver, get a sense of how many cats there are, what the situation is, what commitment the caregiver can give us, and then they'll develop a strategy for doing the trapping. If the caregiver hasn't been feeding regularly and the cats aren't coming regularly, we encourage them to start putting them on a regular feeding schedule so that it makes trapping easier, so that when we're ready to do the trapping, you withhold food the night before. Our trappers come with the trap, they'll set it up, put some really smelly, enticing food for them, and hopefully, if all works well, they just trot into the trap. And then we take them to a pre-op environment. It depends. Sometimes we've had volunteers who've had space where we can actually keep the cats there. Sometimes we ask the caregivers to do that pre-op care, which just means that they're holding the cat in that trap until we can get a vet appointment. And so we have one of our volunteers whose primary responsibility is to call our vets, our participating vets, to see who has a space available to do the surgery. And so we transport the cats to the clinics. They do their thing there. So in addition to actually doing the surgery, they check them out, make sure they're healthy, give them some vaccinations. Oftentimes there are some wounds or injuries that might require some antibiotics, that kind of thing. And then once the surgeries are done, we pick them up again. If we have a post-op site, we will bring them there. We keep them for 24 hours and then bring them back to the caregiver or to the colony site, and we release them there.
I know last year there was that cats on leashes bylaw that was put in place.
Right.
In an effort to kind of curb bird deaths, I think,
yes.
was part of it as well.
Yeah.
Do these feral cats that you return contribute to bird deaths at all?
I would be naive to say that they don't. Mm-hmm. We know that that's just something, a natural instinct that cats do. And I'm a bird lover too. I love all animals, and I understand the concerns that our bird lovers have around the contribution that cats make to the deaths of birds. I would argue, though, that humans have probably been more responsible for bird deaths in terms of loss of habitat and glass buildings and all kinds of things. I do know from personal experience, my neighbor and I have cared for a couple of feral cats over the last few years. Once they get spayed and neutered, especially the males, mm-hmm. They don't roam as much. They probably do some hunting, but because they've got a regular food source, I don't see that happening as much. I had a neighbor's cat who I witnessed more frequently killing chipmunks and birds than the feral cats did. Right. And so the bylaw, I think that there's some value. People get really passionate about these issues. I'm a cat owner. I do believe cats should be indoors. I really think that it's in their best interest health-wise, for their health, but also the health of other living beings in the environment, that they stay indoors. And so I'm okay with that bylaw, but I am not going to fault feral cats because they're outside and they've become wild because humans let them out. Any cat who's outside was once a domestic cat or is a descendant of a domestic cat. And they're feral now because we've abandoned them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just kind of lastly, how did you get involved? What's your interest in cats and caring for feral cats?
Honestly, I'm not sure what happened. I've always, I'm an animal lover. I've always been concerned about animal welfare. And this seemed to be an issue, an area that nobody was talking about. We have great shelters. They get a lot of support in our community. They could use more support. It's probably because Henry, our feral cat, started hanging out in our backyard, in my backyard, and I didn't know what to do. There were no resources when he showed up. And so I was already caring for a feral cat when we found out about this. And I thought, you know what? I can get behind this.
That's wonderful. Well, yeah. Thanks so much for telling us about this.
Thank you for inviting us.
Was a story about Operation Catnip. That material was gathered earlier this year in March, and if you'd like more information about Operation Catnip, you can head over to their website, which is operationcatnip.ca. Colin, if you feel like talking about cats, do you have a rescue cat or a feral cat, or have you participated in Operation Catnip or in trapping feral cats? What's the interest for you? Why do you want to help feral cats? I think for me it's a lot of I guess a measure of pity and this feeling like I don't want to sit around while I watch something happen that could be prevented. Something like a cat freezing to death. So that's where it comes from for me. And I really feel good about the two feral cats that we have turned into indoor cats. I think cats do, like Monique was saying, I think cats do should be indoor cats and should be taken care of by humans. I think that's ultimately better for the ecosystem, for the cat. In our house, our feral cats are now mousers. And, well, Greif is a mouser. Sparrow is too afraid of mice to actually participate. But he watches and he provides moral support. Colin, tell me about your cats if you feel like it. The number is 705-741-4011. You can also tweet at us. We're on Twitter at PTBO_currents. And here's a bit more of this music. This music is Painted Windows by John Whalen, local Peterborough musician. You can find his music at johnwhalen.bandcamp.com. Colin, tell us about your cats. Tell us about how you approach wildlife. Do you feel very strongly that wildlife should be taken care of? Do you think they should be outside? All these things. Colin, tell us about how you feel about that. Number to phone in is 705-741-4011. For the next 20 minutes or so, we're talking about feral animals and taking care of cats in the Peterborough area. 705-741-4011. Up at 10:45, we're going to start talking a bit more about Remembrance Day. So you can also call in to get on the list to talk about that kind of stuff. The number is 705-741-4011. I'd like to know what Remembrance Day means to you. What are you thinking about on this Remembrance Day? What do you remember? What war stands out most in your mind as the event to remember? What are you doing to mark this day? Are you maybe on your way to a Remembrance Day celebration right now? You can phone in and tell us about that. And maybe you have a member of your family who served. You can call in to share stories about that. The number is 705-741-4011. So earlier I played a piece, a documentary about Operation Catnip, which is an organization that can help everyday people who find feral cats in their neighborhood and want to take care of them or rehome them. But sometimes you encounter animals that aren't cats and wouldn't make good pets. What do you do with those? Up until recently, there wasn't a great solution for that. So say if you found a raccoon or a baby squirrel or something and it's helpless and needs your help, who do you call? There wasn't anyone to call for a long while in Peterborough, but now there's an organization called the Kawartha Wildlife Center, and my co-host Will Pearson did a story profiling them. So here's a bit more about the Kawartha Wildlife Center.
A few weeks ago, I woke up and walked downstairs, and you know, I was still waking up, and I shuffled into the kitchen to make coffee when I heard this commotion coming from the living room. Something like had fallen over onto the ground and made a big crash. So I went into the living room, and as I entered, a blackbird flew across the room and right into a window and then fell down onto the windowsill and was shaking a little bit. It looked a little bit scared, and then it flew into the window a couple more times trying to get out. And so I panicked a little bit at first, but then I figured out what to do. I closed a bunch of doors in the house so that the only remaining path for the blackbird was out the front door, which I opened up, and then I chased the bird out the door, and it flew outside. Usually, when animals accidentally get caught up in the lives of humans like that, we can help them untangle themselves and send them on their way, like I did with the blackbird. But sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes they get hurt, and they need a little extra help from us humans before they can be released. That happened to Alyssa Paxton recently, who spoke to me about a surprising guest she helped to save at her friend's house.
So about mid-January, I got a 7:30 in the morning text from some friends of mine that they had a bat flying around their living room, and what should they do? Who should they call? Can I please, please, please come over and help them catch it? So I went over. I work in a very old building, so I occasionally find bats and I've had to deal with them. So I went over, and the thing was obviously a little bit confused, and he was hiding behind a curtain on the window. Just looks like a little mouse with wings and big pointy ears. Very, very classic bat. They sound very angry when they're disturbed, and so they make fun little hissing noises and chittering noises at you. But yeah, they're entirely harmless. And yeah, we just caught it like a bug in a bowl, popped the bowl over it, had a big piece of cardboard that we sort of just popped underneath it, and then dropped it into a box and wrapped it up.
Bats hibernate all winter. So if Alyssa had released the one she found into the wild, it would have died before it could have found a new safe place to wait out the winter. Until recently, there might not have been anywhere for Alyssa to take the bat to be rehabilitated and cared for. But that's about to change with the opening of the Kawartha Wildlife Center, a new non-profit animal rescue hospital based in Ennismore and serving the Kawartha region. Alyssa gave the bat to the center's founder and director, Olivia van der Sanden, who treated it and helped it prepare for release in the spring. I visited the Kawartha Wildlife Center earlier this month to find out more from Olivia about the project.
This is our reception area, so this is where we'll have somebody seated for reception, taking in animals. And off to the side here, this will probably be our triage area, where any animals that come in are immediately assessed in this area for any injuries.
When I visited the center, Olivia was still getting the space ready, but she says she hopes to open within the next few months. It's a dream she's had for a long time, and something she says Peterborough and the Kawarthas badly needs.
So the Kawartha Wildlife Center has been a dream of mine for a really long time. When I went to school for veterinary technology, I knew I had an interest in wildlife, and I didn't really know how I was going to make that happen. There's not really any money in wildlife rehabilitation, so there are lots of people that do it in Ontario, but within about a two-hour radius of Peterborough, there's nothing. So every animal that comes to us, the goal is to get them released back into the wild. So animals that come to us that are orphaned, the step by step when they get here is obviously stabilizing them. Most of those animals are severely hypothermic and are emaciated because they've been without their mom for a while, true orphans that is, and we will raise them. And obviously it's difficult. It's more difficult than raising a dog or a cat because they have to remain wild in order for them to be successful. It's really hard for people when they think about baby bunnies and baby squirrels and baby raccoons. All they want to do is snuggle them and pet them, and that's totally detrimental to the rehab process, because those animals are going to, as soon as they're released, run up to the first person that they see, and that person's going to think that that animal is sick in some way, like it has rabies or a distemper, and they're probably not going to survive very long. So obviously keeping animals wild right from the moment that they come in to the moment that they're released is the most important. And it's really hard sometimes because there's times where you'll hear little fox kits and they're crying and all you want to do is go in there and snuggle them. But you can't, because that's not what's going to help them in the long run. So keeping them wild is the biggest thing and the biggest challenge. And then getting them back out into the wild and back out into the wild, able to function as a successful member of their species. So
responsible wildlife rehabilitation doesn't just mean keeping your distance from an animal as you care for it, Olivia says. Sometimes it means not helping an animal out at all.
For me, it's a really tricky area with a lot of gray zones, because there are times where we will get phone calls from people who have literally chased down and harassed like a fox or a hawk or something and got an animal out of its mouth and brought it to us and been like, you need to rehabilitate this. And it's like, well, I mean, realistically, that was that animal's lunch and now it's got to go out and hunt for something else. So those are circumstances where I'm kind of like, that's not really fair. And then also people thinking that they can do a better job at raising orphaned animals than the animal itself can. Those are always frustrating as well. We get a lot of phone calls of, actually just recently had a phone call from a woman who rescued this family of baby bunnies because it was raining outside and it wasn't fair that they were getting rained on, and actually took it upon herself to start tube feeding these bunnies. And I said, well, why do you think that you can do a better job of raising these bunnies than their mom can? Because you can't. They're actually one of the most difficult animals to rehabilitate. They die very, very easily, and probably all those little babies are going to die. And I mean, there's a lot of bunnies out there, but it's still not fair to think that we can do a better job than nature can itself. So those are circumstances where I kind of, I don't feel right. And I really try very, very hard not to take those animals in and to advise the people to put them back. But like circumstances of people going out and their cats catching a bird or something like that, that's not natural. So not a natural predator of birds. So those are situations where I would definitely intervene. There's a lot of gray areas and a lot of areas where like people can learn to do better. The most satisfying part about being a wildlife rehabilitator is after you have spent so many sleepless nights and hours just rehabilitating the animal, taking care of it, doing wound management, dressing changes, feeding babies throughout the night. And all of that work is so much, and sometimes it's overwhelming and it's very stressful. But when you get to take that animal back to where it came from and you open the cage door and you watch them run back out into their natural habitat, that is the coolest thing in the world, is watching them go free, and you know that you've done a really good job when they run out of that cage and they don't even look back. It feels really, really good getting to see that and knowing that you've done a good job and that they're free and they're back to where they belong as well.
As Olivia builds and equips her new facility, she's helping local wildlife by arranging rides for injured animals to other rehabilitation centers in the province. But she's looking forward to the day when she can start caring for animals herself. She's also building a network of volunteers and raising money. So if you'd like to get involved, visit www.kawarthawildlifecenter.ca.
That was a doc by Will Pearson, who just entered the building, about the Kawartha Wildlife Center. This is Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. We're also a podcast. You can find us in most podcast apps, and if you don't find us in your podcast app of choice, let us know. You can also find us online at peterboroughcurrents.ptbopodcasters.ca. We take calls on this show, and in about 5 minutes, we're going to start talking about Remembrance Day and devote the second half of our show to calls about that. But if you want to sneak in a quick call and talk about animals, we could do that too. So the phone number is 705-741-4011. You can also get us on Twitter. We're at PTBO_currents. And like I said, we're talking about Remembrance Day in about 5 minutes. And we want to hear calls from you. Are you perhaps on your way to a Remembrance Day celebration? What are you thinking about today? What war does this recall for you? And who is there anyone specifically that comes to mind? So phone in or tweet at us. Phone in at 705-741-4011. So we're about to start talking about Remembrance Day and veterans and war. If you'd like to phone in, the number is 705-741-4011. You can also get us on Twitter, PTBO_currents. And at the top of the hour, we'll be doing a minute, 2 minutes of silence. So that's coming up. And if you'd like to phone in, the number again, 705-741-4011. The number to call in again is 705-741-4011. Thank you. So it's 10:45 and about 15 minutes to the top of the hour when we'll be doing a minute of silence. And we're taking your calls about Remembrance Day. How are you feeling about it? What are you thinking of? And we have our first caller on the line. Let me see if I can do this right. Hello, Jeffrey, are you there?
I am, and I can hear you.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Our phones are working today.
So we're talking about Remembrance Day today. What are you thinking on this day?
Just, like, lots of sadness. I was crying earlier just thinking about, like, state of the world. It's pretty, I don't know. Like, a lot of people fought and died for some very important things, and it seems like we're forgetting those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't want to say, like, as a whole, but there's a big group of people who just don't care anymore, and they're super happy to, like, continue on with, like, the exploitative practices that led to the shittiest wars that we've dealt with. So it's just really, it's pretty miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking earlier as well, like, the imagery we see around Remembrance Day is mostly tied up with World War One and World War Two, which mm-hmm. were, of course, about fighting fascists. And I think we are seeing today a lot of similar conversations about protectionism and nationalism and bigotry towards minorities. And I don't know, I feel like I've failed to see that in Remembrance Day coverage thus far, but I think it's an important thing to keep in mind what beyond just remembering the veterans who fought and died, which is an incredibly important aspect of it, but also remembering what that fight was about.
Like, we're not done. Like, it's not done. Right? Like, people forget that, like it's not just something that happened, like 70 years ago. It's something that's, like, happening right now. It's something that's always been happening. It's something that we need to fight every day. Like, we can't just say the veterans did their job and we can, you know, wash our hands of it. Right? We're part of it. We have to fight, too. And it's not necessarily a war. We don't got to gear up. We don't got to go to, like, training or anything. We just got to be good people and care about everyone around us and look out for each other. And that's a war. That's a war that we're fighting against people who don't care, right? And, like, that's so important. And, yeah, I hear you. I'd like to hear more of that in Remembrance Day ceremonies. I always, like, they read Flanders Fields, and it's like, yeah, but that feels so far removed from what's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe read about, like racist killings. Like, read about serial killers who are going out and killing, like, Muslim people. Or read about school shootings and how we have to combat that culture of gun violence. Like, there's so much that we need to be fighting every day, and like, the news covers it 1 week, and then we lose it the next week, and then on Remembrance Day, we talk about a bunch of old people who did amazing things, and we forget that there's a bunch of young people who are continuing to carry on that legacy of fighting fascism, and I think those people need to be celebrated as well.
Mm-hmm. One phenomenon that I've seen in years past is wearing a white poppy, in addition to or instead of the red poppy, and the white poppy is supposed to represent remembrance for the victims of war, refugees, people like civilians who died, and that kind of impact of it. And I neglected to wear my poppies today because I'm an idiot. But I tend to wear both because I think it is important to include victims of war beyond just the soldiers who are themselves victims of war in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have that aspect of compassion for, and remember, like, why we were going to war in the first place. And I think often the humanitarian side of war, like the messaging around that, I mean, putting aside, you know, the more nefarious aspects of war, like imperialism and things like that, geopolitics, but the more humanitarian side of, like, we're going to war to free people who are facing persecution or prejudice. I think it's important to call upon that imagery as well. Yeah, I know the white poppy is kind of controversial, though, but I'm wondering if that would be something you would consider wearing.
Well, like, I'm not super well connected to the war, as far as I know. Like, I don't know. I've never heard stories of anyone in my family who fought. I know on my dad's side, there were, like, his parents were refugees from the Second World War.
Hmm.
And, like, his dad and his dad's brother, and I think his dad's brother's wife, and there's words for this, uncle. They came over on a boat, and my grandfather's brother died on the boat.
Hmm.
And like that's sort of like that's all I got in terms of a story related to the war. I don't have any more details. I don't even know what their background was. Why they came over. I just know that they had to get out of there. Like, it was a bad situation for them, and you know, just in fleeing their country, they became, you know, like, there was no support for people who were getting out. Like, clearly, if they're on a boat and they're dying, there's not, like, medical staff there to treat them. There's not supplies to keep them going. It's just like, get on the boat and go. If you happen to find a boat, God bless you, you made it. And everyone else who couldn't find a boat, they were just left behind to suffer. I don't know. I agree with the white poppy. I feel like there's a lot of people that we need to remember who weren't just, like, the heroes in the war. You know, like they're very important. They're very important. But when we forget about the victims, when we forget about the people that were lost on the other side, you know, not to sympathize with their politics, but to remember that, like, there were deaths everywhere, not just in the ranks of Canadian soldiers, and death sucks. Having to kill people over ideological differences sucks, and it would be great if we could just have, I don't know, a common ideology that didn't include murdering a bunch of people. That would be ideal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was thinking, I was thinking as we were talking, it's kind of interesting that Justin Trudeau recently, like, apologized for refusing refugees during the World War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, great, but, like, what are we doing right now? Are we not, like, refusing a lot of refugees from these war-torn? Like, that literally happened in, like, the past, like, 3 years. That we've been turning away refugees from these war-torn countries because, what, we don't have enough room?
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy it, you know? Like, I don't know. It's getting ridiculous to watch politics these days, but to see Mr. Trudeau be so, I don't know, an apology isn't enough. You know, you've got to act, and I would like to see politicians being more active in, mm-hmm. like you.
I think there's an aspect of the symbology versus the real world action in terms of Mr. Trudeau, but also in terms of Remembrance Day. Like, I think there's a lot of symbology around the First and Second World Wars, but I don't think there's a big conversation or a lot of action around wars that are going on now and, you know, tensions that might be building up to wars in the future. And I think Remembrance Day is a good time to meditate on, you know, the real world, like, kind of imminent things, I guess, that that might be impacting our day-to-day lives, and trying to remember that war is awful, and people die for worse than nothing, as my friend posted on Facebook. And I think it's important to remember that and try to take that kind of remembrance into our day-to-day conversations about politics. So thanks very much for calling in, Jeffrey.
Anytime.
Okay. This is Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. We're talking about Remembrance Day. If you'd like to phone in, the number is 705-741-4011. Are you wearing a poppy? Do you not wear a poppy? Call in to talk about that. We're coming up to the top of the hour when we'll be doing a minute of silence. And I'm curious to know what you think about during the minute of silence on Remembrance Day. What's going through your mind? Are you thinking of someone in particular? Are you thinking of war? What are your thoughts? Phone in 705-741-4011. You can also reach us on Twitter, PTBO_currents. Chris Drew reached out on Twitter. He said, "I happened to be in Peterborough today, where my grandfather on my dad's side trained before heading off to Sicily." Yeah, so Chris has a family connection to Peterborough and to a war here. Do you have a family member who maybe was stationed at Trenton or trained in Peterborough? Are you a cadet, perhaps? You can phone in and share your thoughts. We're coming up to the top of the hour, so probably not a great time to call now. I'll just put on some music until we reach 11 o'clock, and then we'll take some more calls. The number to phone in, 705-741-4011. And find us on Twitter, PTBO_currents. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. According to various clocks in my vicinity, it is either 10:58 or 10:59 or 11. So I think we're going to do the moment of silence. So as it's Remembrance Day, as tradition calls, it is we observe a moment of silence and we think about those people who gave their lives and served in world wars or any war. I would also encourage you to remember and think about victims of war today. There are many wars happening around the world. I'm thinking of Yemen specifically, and I think it's important to think of the people who are victims of war today and the soldiers serving right now, not only the World War One and Two. War is an omnipresent thing, unfortunately, in our world, and I think it's important to think about that. You're listening to Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM, and we're going to observe a moment of silence. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. Today we're talking about Remembrance Day for the next about half hour, and we want to hear from you. We're taking calls at 705-741-4011. What do you think about on Remembrance Day? What was going through your mind during a moment of silence? You can phone in 705-741-4011. Once again, the number to phone in to talk about Remembrance Day is 705-741-4011. Like I said, today on Peterborough Currents, we're talking about Remembrance Day. In the background, we've got music by John Whalen. You can phone in to talk about Remembrance Day. The number is 705-741-4011. Last year, for Remembrance Day, I produced a story for Peterborough Currents about the nursing sisters who served in the First World War. There is... The Victoria County Historical Society put on a performance about the nursing sisters based on a bunch of letters that they found that were published in the local newspaper. So they organized a church service and had some songs and some performances about those nursing sisters. So I just want to play that story again. If there's any prompt to go to an event, I'll remind you that this is from last year and that event is probably not happening. So this is a story that I did last year about the nursing sisters of World War I. Difficulties, I think. Okay, let's go back to the piano music. I've sorted it out. Here's my story about the nursing sisters of Lindsay, who served in World War I.
So I'm Ian McCackney, and I'm a curatorial assistant with the Victoria County Historical Society here in Lindsay. So on the evening of November the 12th, on Sunday evening, we're having a service of commemoration and remembrance for the almost 30 women from what's now the city of Kawartha Lakes who served as nursing sisters in the First World War. Some of them were born here and trained here, others lived here for part of their life and then moved elsewhere. But theirs is a story that often gets forgotten in local history. And the highlight, I think, of the evening will be readings from letters that were written by three of the nursing sisters, Winifred Ethel Hardy, Catherine Eva McKinnon, and Delia Maud Dayton.
So I'm Haley Webster, and I'm a grade 9 student at I.E. Weldon Secondary School. I play Winifred Hardy, who was a nurse in World War I. Dear people of Peniel, Sunday afternoon and just 3 o'clock. I suppose you will all be sitting in church while I am sitting here in my room writing. We have been very busy despite the fact there is no big push on. Still the men are sick with cold and trench feet and various ailments of that kind. And that way the hospital is always full, although the patients don't require as much care as they do in the summer when they come down with such dreadful wounds. As I think I said, I have been on night duty. I had charge of 5 wards, each with 66 patients, so you can imagine that I didn't have many idle moments. I must confess that I didn't love it very much at first. It was no fun wandering from one tent to another, stumbling over guy ropes, and continually losing my way in the dark. But after a while, I grew used to it, and now feel very brave.
When you first read it, what was your first reaction to it?
My first reaction was that she was very, very, very lonely. With speaking about how she talks about shedding the homesick tears at Christmas, and she mentions a lot about really missing her home. And I also thought about how busy she is and how much work she was doing with the 66 patients in 5 wards. And it's crazy almost to think about how much she was doing and how far away she was from home and that.
The anthem is called How They So Softly Rest, All They the Holy Dead. And I think on the one hand it speaks to certainly all those who died in the First World War, the several thousand Canadians that were killed in France and Belgium and other such places. But more broadly it refers to, I think, and certainly for our context, the fact that so many of these nursing sisters lived to a great age and died peacefully in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they were often forgotten about. One of the lines in the anthem is talks about them being in their silent graves, and certainly today you go into Riverside Cemetery here in town, and I could point out to you about 3 stones under which lie First World War nursing sisters, and there's no plaque, no recognition that they served in this capacity.
That was a piece produced by me, Aisha Barmenia. The Unsung Heroes Service Remembering Those Nursing Sisters is happening tomorrow, Sunday, November 12th, 2017, in Lindsay at the St. Paul's Anglican Church.
I'm glad I put that date in there at the end. So that was an event that happened last year, in 2017, about the nursing sisters who served in the First World War. I think that's one aspect of the remembrance of the world wars that doesn't get talked about a lot is like there were a lot of women who went over and served as nursing sisters and as civilians in the First World War and Second World War. And a lot of them, not a lot, but a group of them came from the Kawartha Lakes area. So Ian McKechnie does a lot of work with the Victoria County Historical Society to help remember the work that they put in. This is Peterborough Currents. I'm Aisha Barmania. Today we're talking about Remembrance Day, and we have about 10 minutes left if you'd like to call in. The number is 705-741-4011. And you can also get us on Twitter at PTBO_currents. And again, the phone number is 705-741-4011. Again, the number to phone in is 705-741-4011. We're taking calls about Remembrance Day for the next about 10 minutes. Thank you. This is Peterborough Currents. We're talking about Remembrance Day for the next couple minutes until the show ends. If you'd like to phone in, you can call in to 705-741-4011 and share your story on the air. Did you do something special for Remembrance Day? What are you thinking about? What do you remember? Did you, a couple people I know forget that it was Remembrance Day today? What do you think is the significance of marking this day? Phone in 705-741-4011. We also have a bit of time and I can plug some stuff from the Twitter. So we're on Twitter at PTBO_currents. But if you'd like to phone in and chat for a couple minutes, the number is 705-741-4011. Thank you. You've been listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. You can find our past live shows and our podcast on our website, peterboroughcurrents.ptbopodcasters.ca. You can also sign up for our email newsletter and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can get updates from us there. Thanks for listening. Thank you to Jeffrey, who phoned in today. Thank you to John Whalen for the music that's been playing in the background here. You can find his music online and purchase it or download it at johnwhalen.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Will Pearson for the story about the Kawartha Wildlife Center. And I'm Aisha Barmania. Thank you to Jeff for manning the phones. And thank you to Trent Radio for the broadcast facility. And thank you to Peterborough Independent Podcasters for the podcasting resources. And thank you to the veterans who served in our in the wars. Your service is deeply valued, and thank you very much. And I'm thinking of you on this Remembrance Day. Thanks so much for tuning in, and have a great day.